Recording.
Yeah, recording.
This is Mom's Basement Podcast, episode 29. And today we are going to be talking about the first half of our playtest of Keystone, because the first half is all we've done.
Yes, it's fairly long.
It's a longer game,
yeah.
And we wanted to give it the credit of actually really doing a rather in-depth play, and so we focused this time on doing character creation and world building.
Yep.
So we'll talk a little bit about our initial impressions of the game, and then we will probably talk about some other topics.
Some bullshit.
Some random
bullshit. As requested by the one guy who wants to hear random bullshit. Okay. So, first and foremost, Keystone, unless someone has some announcements or opening chatter. I think we need some opening chatter. Rudy, like, say something about your girlfriend. How's she doing?
I'm dating a girl.
No. Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's not even remote.
No. that's just bullshit.
Okay, I think that reaches the bar for a main opening chatter.
Yep.
Okay. So, Keystone.
Okay.
Yep.
Messianic fantasy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is cool. I like
that.
That
is cool. That's really
cool.
I think it gets at something that a lot of fantasy games don't. Something you wouldn't find, say, in your average D&D game, where all characters are necessarily of equal importance, and all characters are, you know, they're pursuing a plot, you know, as dictated by the GM. But that plot may just be a pretense to get them in the dungeon. And even if it's more cinematic than that, often it doesn't have that same sense as this is going to end with some epic moment where a destiny is achieved. And that's what messianic fantasy is. It's about playing a character who has a great destiny that they have to achieve, or might achieve, or hope to achieve.
Right.
And pursuing that destiny. So I think it gives a greater sense of what the word I'm looking for here, scope or poignancy or simply tension to the drama, knowing that you're building up towards some kind of ultimate climax. So I think it's cool to see someone take this approach.
I like the way it's presented as well, because it's presented as though you're trying to present a play of some sort.
Because it has, like, acts, and it has stage left, stage right.
Stage right, and it has, like, the props and all that stuff. And it gives this sort of sense, like, oh, play would actually be presented where you're going to have this one major character who will fulfill his destiny.
Right.
And a bunch of his allies, and very specific character types that are there. And it tries to break that down. I almost feel that he did this in reverse, where he started with the play and he went into the messianic fantasy.
I'm not sure how that ultimately worked. I think there's a linkage there. I mean, I guess the idea is that this should be like some grand drama, like a passion play, I guess, would be appropriate for messianic drama. I'm not sure. I don't know. When I think of messianic fantasy, I think of mythology, I think of religion, I think of, you know, more recent occurrences of epic fantasy in novel form. I don't really think of, I might think of opera even, if you want to think about Wagner. I don't really think of drama, though. I don't really think of theater and plays. When I think of theater and plays, I think of, you know, classical tragedies, which are very different. You know, the more personal, contemporary style dramas or comedies. Fantasy is really a genre that I don't tend to associate with the stage, particularly messianic fantasy. So to me, that link seems a little bit tenuous between drama and messianic fantasy. Drama as in theater.
Right. Well, I can actually kind of get that link, though, honestly. Because I can kind of... The way I feel this was done is sort of like your Greek play.
Oh, okay.
Mm. So yeah, where you would have people acting out the mythology.
Right.
So
right.
He's thinking, like, way classical rather than, you know...
But I mean...
Rather than your Shakespearean.
Even when I think of Greek plays, though, I think more like tragedies, you
right.
know?
Yeah. I'll give you that.
I think of that format, or satires.
Mm. Yeah.
But you could be right here in that there may be plays that are sort of Greek epics. I don't know if epic drama was a thing then.
I really don't know. I'd be curious to find out
yeah,
if
sure
the designer, Charles Nafe,
yeah, I believe, yeah,
knows something about this and wants to contribute. That'd be great. I'd love to hear on that point. Oh, we didn't introduce ourselves. Still least professional podcast on internet.
Yep.
Yes. I am William, sometimes Hank.
I'm Rudy.
And I'm Mike.
Mr. Mike. Yep. So, okay, so we covered the general scope of the game, the general theme. How about the particulars of play? Now, as I said before, we didn't get to play itself. We got to world building and character creation.
Yep.
And we could also maybe talk about presentation or whatever if we wanted to. So where do you want to start? Anyone have any starting thoughts? I mean, the game begins with world building, so we could begin with
we
world
should
building.
Start there.
Yeah.
Yeah, world building is what you'd expect. I mean, you build like the general, like world, the planet, and
it actually starts differently than that, though. It doesn't start with here's some ideas about your world. It starts with a single sentence.
Oh, yeah.
And it starts with a sentence about the Bane, who is the major villain, the major antagonistic for it. So that's an interesting way, I think, to approach world creation, which is rather than starting with the world, rather than starting with vague ideas about the setting, starting with your antagonist. And I think that is a very dramatic way to do it, if we want to talk about drama again, if we want to...
That's true.
I think...
Yeah, it starts with kind of the antagonist at center of stage.
Right, right. And it starts with a sense of what you're up against.
Yeah.
As opposed to simply, you know, a sense of what the world is, what the stage you're acting on is. Mm-hmm. Which I think could, in theory, lead to a more dramatic game.
Mm.
A more dramatically...
Sense of purpose, maybe.
Right. Yeah. More sense of purpose, more dramatic focus.
Yeah.
If everything rises out of the antagonist, as opposed to building a world and then saying, oh, shit, they have to be fighting against someone. How about this dude? Yeah, because the antagonist is known. It gives a clear-cut objective, so you don't have any sort of lollygagging around for... An antagonist that the character don't even know is an antagonist yet, but the DM plans to be later.
Right.
And I mean, it means that you start world creation with something that's going to be important in play.
Right.
Which is good. Especially since world creation, any type of world creation, or any type of creation really, world creation, character creation, tends to fizzle out as you progress.
Yeah.
It's always kind of a draining thing where you start out with energy and ideas, and by the end it's like, well, let's finish this.
Yeah.
And if you had the antagonist coming later, you wouldn't be devoting as much focus and energy to building the antagonist.
Well, that said, I think we devoted not so much energy to building the antagonist a lot to building the world.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Ultimately,
it was basically like, well, what's the antagonist? Oh, it's some meteor or some
shit. Right,
yeah. And then we basically just
And then the world kind of didn't have anything to do with it.
And really,
I don't know if that's a fault in the game or just a fault with our approach to the game.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that may be our approach to the
game.
Because you could very easily line the two up, although what we chose is in it.
Yeah, although not really, because he says just start with one sentence.
Right.
And the section on the Bane is actually pretty small compared to the other.
Yeah, just start with a single sentence.
Yeah, most of the stuff about how to play the Bane and what you do with the Bane is in the GM/director's area, which is...
And this is really the second game we've played after Final Hour of Storied Age that builds its setting through sentence construction,
where
it starts with, write a sentence about this. Someone offers a sentence about the antagonist or about the world or whatever,
and then you build a setting out of the sentence, as opposed to starting with general ideas and then crafting it into a sentence. How do you think that works? How do you feel about that?
I think it can be good, but also kind of limiting.
Yeah.
The way it does it in this one is actually not good at all, in my opinion. Because we built these three sentences, and then half of what we did had nothing to do with these sentences.
Really, you think with the, I mean, with the setting sentences, I think those pretty much set up the game.
Yeah, well, somewhat they did.
The Bane one really didn't.
The Bane did.
But there were, you make, after you write your Bane sentence, you write three sentences about the setting.
Yeah, the setting.
And I feel like those ones did have an
impact. Those had
some impact on what we...
That said, I'm not sure how I feel about this make a sentence as a way of getting spurring creativity. Maybe if the game, sort of as Final Hour of a Storied Age does, generated sentences for you, although I was really fundamentally unhappy with the system that Final Hour of a Storied Age used to generate those sentences, I feel like if there was some kind of random generation of these sentences, or if there was some way for the game to give you pieces to assemble into these sentences.
Right.
But I think saying, come up with a sentence, a vague sentence that describes this, doesn't really offer much of a spur for creativity, in my mind. Because in my mind, you're doing all the conceptual work first anyway before you can write the sentence.
Right.
You're saying, well, before I can construct this sentence, I have to decide all these things that we're going to have to decide later, or else I won't even know what to say for my sentence.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And maybe if you are someone who really enjoys free-form brainstorming, where you know, you write sentences, this is very much a brainstorming type of method, you know, where you'd almost have a whiteboard and you'd be throwing things up on it. Here, give me a sentence, throw it up on the whiteboard. But I don't, personally, I don't think that way. I think conceptually first, and then you take that and you craft it, and the sentence is a finished product. In my mind, language is always the finished product, not the starting point. Or at least sentences are the finished product. So, I don't know, that's just personal preference.
I'm kind of with you there. I need a starting point myself of where, I need a jumping off point to
know
where I'm getting at. And this kind of is like,
And I'm not sure that a single sentence that you know is going to have profound significance in the game is a good place to dip your toes in the water, you know, of setting creation.
Well, to have one sentence that a player has to feel that has to evoke this massive world-building thing, and one sentence is really limiting there.
There's a lot of burden on that sentence, and that's one thing that I don't like in RPGs when it, from a creative perspective. I don't like it when the game starts making heavy demands of you initially. I think the game should give you pieces, the game should ease you into play, which is one reason why I'm not a big fan of heavily loading character creation, heavily loading world creation into the beginning of games. It's something I absolutely don't do in my games. The way I usually say, okay, let's give, in character creation, let's give the players some simple things that spur their creativity. So let them pick some words out of a hat, or let them pick a concept out of the hat, or let them give them some pieces that, and then say, okay, assemble these pieces into something. And then move forward from there without, because I feel like if it's a high pressure thing and if it's a high impact behavior with very little to ease you into it, very little to create an impetus for creativity, that the stress and ambiguity of it is going to be more, is going to actually harm the creative potential. It's going to limit your ability to engage creatively with the game.
Yeah. But I agree with that mostly. Especially for character creation. I don't know about setting creation.
Setting creation is almost a different matter, I guess.
Yeah.
I've never made a game that has setting creation.
Yeah.
Because the setting's preformed for most areas.
Right. Or it's like, pick a setting.
Yeah. It's like, who cares?
But yeah, So, world creation. I feel like the list of things that you need to come up with for world creation could have been shorter. I really like the fact that he offers a list of questions, and the questions are pretty specific and well laid out.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure there needed to be so many questions, because once again, that's really front-loading world creation. And it's really making world creation this thing that you have to almost slog through to get to play.
Yeah,
I was not okay with how much there was either. But only because, in a different, completely different way, I'm not sure we're going to be using everything he asked.
That's right. Yeah. That's,
there has to be utility to everything you do,
in
my opinion.
Because ultimately, we didn't end up really using a lot of the magic that we spent 20 minutes or so defining.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So that is something. I feel like if he had offered us five questions, five core questions, or five core, maybe not questions, components, five core components, or six or seven core components that you needed to spell out, as opposed to 20 questions, or whatever the number of questions is.
Yeah.
Now, some of these questions, though, have mechanical significance. Mm-hmm. Like the magic questions, I can see why he had in there. And there were only three of those.
But they were also very time-consuming
questions. They were. Because they were very mechanical about how you actually think about how you're doing said magic.
So,
two specifics, may I add.
Right.
And that would be important if magic became a major component of play.
Right.
But at this stage, you don't really know.
Yeah, and the way our character is shaped up, it doesn't look like it's going to be.
It's going to be, because no one ended up using magic.
Right.
No one ended up spending our facets on magic.
On magic, yeah. So
there's that. Any other thoughts on world creation?
I'm not so sure you need the technology either, because that seemed to go hand in hand with the prior world building myself.
Hmm. Yeah, by the time we arrived at technology,
yeah.
We had already filled in those blanks. Although I could certainly imagine a group that wouldn't have filled in those blanks
by that point
in time.
Yeah, that's pop. Yeah, I suppose I see your point there.
But once again, if technology was, instead of being a series of questions, if there was a short form way to just quickly address technology.
Yeah.
In a short form way to quickly address magic.
Yeah.
In fact, if what I would really like would be a section, a quick play version of world and character creation.
Yeah.
So if someone wanted to use the in-depth rules, the long questionnaire that's presented here, they could. Because I can see a lot of groups really getting into that.
Right.
Yeah.
And really wanting to spend, you know, two separate hour-long sessions or
whatever,
world creation and then character creation.
Right.
But I think the game should be reasonably accessible to people who don't want to put that much into it, while still allowing them to get what's necessary to really start the game. So a quick play section might be useful.
Right.
One thing I really did love, though, and this has been missing from a lot of the manuals we've been presented with, is the fact that at the end of each chapter, and sometimes in the middle of chapters, if the chapters are particularly long, he offers a summary.
Yeah,
every chapter, bullet points, boom, 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 boom. And you can look at it and say, oh, okay, that's where I need to be next, and then scroll back to that part in the manual.
Yeah.
Considering the bulk of what's here, that was tremendously useful.
That's going to be even more useful, because if you take a break from this game for a while, come back to it, all you need to do is look at this bulletin point,
since
you're already familiar with the game.
Yeah.
Right.
Great idea there.
And we had actually read the rules of this game like a month ago, because we were going to playtest it then, and then we had to go on hiatus briefly, and then we did Arani's episode.
Yeah.
So having those bullet points there when we returned to the game was very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Character creation.
Yes.
I like what I can see character creation leading to, but once again, it was a very large, rather cumbersome process.
Yeah. Let's Okay, one other note quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The Bane needs his own character sheet. Note. Mm-hmm. However, that isn't explained until later, but it isn't explained at the beginning either what you need to do. So you need to
right.
read the director's section before you even start with the Bane stuff. Right.
Which is another...
That's the only thing I didn't like out of that part, because I didn't even know what I was doing until I read that part, and that's the one part I didn't read.
Which is another place where a quick play summary chapter would be very useful, so that someone playing the director doesn't have to scroll all the way down and read the entire director section to be prepared to have something to do while the players are creating characters.
Or even just the... to build a Bane character C page, etc.
Right.
That would be awesome.
Right, that would have been nice. Destinies. I feel like the Destiny section of character creation is rather vague.
It could use some examples.
It could use some examples. He does a good job of presenting archetypal characters that match each Destiny, but he doesn't do a good job of explaining... exactly what you should be writing on your character sheet now while you're creating your character.
Exactly.
So, how specific you want to... First of all, whether or not you need to write something for each destiny or simply designate that you have each destiny.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you do need to write something for each destiny, if you need to write a blurb about the destiny for each character, how specific should that be? What should it get into? I would really like to see a sidebar with sample destinies of each destiny type.
Yeah.
If that is something that you are supposed to create. The same thing with milestones. Milestones, what exactly goes into creating a milestone during character creation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is not well explained.
We know
mechanically when the milestone is reached,
but
we don't know what the milestone really is and what we need to have on our characters.
Yeah.
It's about how specific you need to get at the beginning of the game that we have no clue about. It's very vague on that point.
Right.
And
however, it is wonderfully well explained after that.
Right.
Yeah.
The arts and art pieces, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Very well explained.
Yeah.
Presented in some detail. The facet points and how they work, very well explained.
Yep.
And set piece, nemesis, all very well explained.
Yeah.
I actually like the way he breaks down facet points and stuff so you can have a choice of where to spend them. You can spend them on costumes or you can spend them on, you know...
And I especially like the things you can spend them on.
Exactly.
Because they make a lot of sense for this kind of game.
Exactly.
Extras, which are lackeys or supporting characters. Props, which are, you know, almost artifacts, or at least high important items of high importance, which are something that tends to come into play in these kinds of fantasy. You know, the magical staff that your grandfather gave you, or whatever. And costumes, which are just as the flamboyant persona almost.
Yeah.
So you can say, you know, my character's wearing
my
this.
My character's
cool
wearing
cape.
This, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because those are the things people tend to create anyway.
And the cool cape does something.
Exactly. Right.
Fucking finally, the cool cape
does
something.
Yep.
So often, I've seen so many games where you go to the equipment section or whatever, and you're like, yeah, this looks cool, I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
And then it never comes up in play, or you have to make it a point to bring it up in play.
Right, exactly.
It has no mechanical... The fact that your player looks badass has no mechanical significance in both games, and that's a goddamn shame, I think. And I think that's something that's fantastic here.
Yeah.
Looking badass means something.
Yeah.
Looking badass and being badass.
Yeah.
Or looking ridiculous means something.
Well, yeah.
Or looking like a fool means something if
that's
you are the fool.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
And also set pieces are good because they let you basically, you know, build your ship or build your whatever.
Right.
And that means something, and that can be front-loaded into play.
Right.
And basically...
And it also gives you an easy way to introduce a dramatic scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. Where should this be set?
Yeah.
Well, let's pick some place where someone has a set piece
so
we know something dramatic will happen there.
Yeah. Yeah, all that stuff I like. Well, the options here Just the right amount of options.
Yeah. I think, all in all, character creation a lot stronger than world creation.
Yeah.
Yes.
I really think the Destinies thing and the Milestone thing needs to be laid out more clearly in actual play terms, i.e. what does this mean in the game and what should be written on your character sheet, because that was bewildering. But yeah, everything beyond that is really strong. Mm-hmm. Any other final thoughts for now on Keystone?
Yeah, the Mentor and Puppet Master system, I'm not sure how balanced that would be in...
In play?
Yeah, in our
game. Yeah, we opted not to use
it. Yeah, we didn't use it in our game because we didn't really think we had enough players.
Yeah, make it possible.
Yeah, this seems to be like a 4 or 5 person game.
Yeah, that's...
The fact that there are almost templates here that you can use to create a certain type of character.
Yep.
Yeah.
By denying yourself certain possible destinies.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that the Puppet Master, for example, would only have the Architect Destiny, which is kind of the Plotter Schemer Destiny, and the Tragic Destiny. Because really, if you're that kind of character, the kind of character who has control over armies or who has this large, intricate plan or scheme, it makes sense that their life can really only go two ways. Either they fulfill the scheme and they become powerful, or there's... You know, best laid plans of mice and men, their scheme collapses around them, and it ends badly. Yeah. Same thing with the Mentor, where he either becomes the ultimate ally, or he betrays the character, or dies tragically.
Right. And it's perfect for those people who don't want to be the lead in the story at all.
Right.
That's a good point,
And who really have a true... when they start play, have a very clear idea about what kind of character they want to play... Mm. And don't really want to introduce the possibility that they could end up with a destiny that isn't applicable at all to what they want to play.
Right. Exactly.
I would actually like to see more of these. I would like to see a whole list of...
See, that's what I was thinking, too.
Same here, yeah.
Because at 2, it seems a little strange.
Yeah, because I almost missed it when I went through the book the first time.
And it's not given a special section.
No, it's not.
And there's not many more combos that you could possibly do, because then you got... Keystone Tragic, and then you have the three sets, which are Architect, Ally, Tragic, and etc., etc. So you don't really have a lot more.
You could have some that didn't have a Tragic Destiny, though. You could have one that was like Wise Man or something, who had Architect and Ally.
Isn't Tragic the one that's like Failure, sort of?
Well, you joined Bane, basically.
I don't know if it's failure per se, though. I think it's just another, a different dramatic outcome, really.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe, okay.
But yeah, you're right, since part of it is precluding the possibility of a Keystone Destiny. There really aren't that many other combinations. Yeah. But,
so far, so good.
To, sum it up, a little bit too front-loaded, a little bit too much weight and burden on early play, but a lot of mechanical potential here for fun, actual play. We get into the heart of the game. It just takes a little while to get there.
Yeah.
So, that's Keystone. We will be talking... more about Keystone next episode as we actually sit down and enter the play portion of the game. I think we're about 30 minutes in. So, anything else you want to discuss?
Nothing I...
This isn't RPG related, but frankly, it is RPG related. Game of Thrones.
That's an interesting show.
I assume that everyone in our audience of 3 people is watching this.
Yeah.
I certainly hope so, at least.
I have not read George R. R. Martin's books.
Same here.
I have not either. But I might after I see the
episodes.
I don't think I'll read it. I don't mean to be insulting here, but... I actually like TV shows like this because that are based on literature or movies that are based on this kind of fiction, because it gives me a chance to watch. It gives me an a chance to experience books that are good but not good enough to read.
Poor George R. R. Martin.
Sorry, but that's the only way I can say it, really. Which is that a book is always a commitment.
Yeah.
It really is.
Because
you're saying, I'm going to sit down and devote however long it takes to read it.
Yeah.
And a book of the length of A Song of Fire and Ice, or any of George R. R. Martin's books,
yeah,
a real commitment.
Yeah. Fair.
And I have my nightstand is piled high with books that I want to and need to read. And generally they're books that couldn't be really effectively translated into film.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of Nabokov there. And books that are dependent upon the language that they're written in for their effectiveness. So books that aren't fundamentally plot-oriented, or not fundamentally about having a colorful cast of characters. They're books that are fundamentally about the language they're written in and the ideas that they express. But yet, I know that because that's what I read, I'm missing out on all this other stuff. Oh, most of the genre fiction stuff. You know, most, if there's a good detective novel or a good courtroom novel or something, I'm never going to pick it up and read it because I don't want to commit 10 hours to it. But I will commit 2 mindless hours to sitting down and watching the movie of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what
that's
this
a fair
is good for. I did actually pick up A Song of Fire and Ice in the library once, and I read the first page, and I was like, ew, fantasy. I was like, there's magic here, goodbye.
I think, personally for me, though, I think it is that it's an excuse to watch the series again while I'm reading the novel.
Yeah, that's true.
No, that's a good point.
With something that length, there's good chance to, like, drop it for a bit, pick it back up later.
Right.
For me,
yeah.
I have read a lot of literature, and the stuff I do read is more non-fictional stuff.
Right, right.
That's what I read.
That's almost exclusively what I read. I really can't stomach much fiction.
I can. The only kind of fiction I can really stomach is the crime novel, and that's pretty much it. So, I've read some fantasy, but it's very narrow what I like.
I read Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I read Lord of the Rings and Robert Jordan, Wheel of Time.
I did not read that.
I did not read that, and I
just
will
the
not
first
read that.
Book. Yeah, it gets into a lot of like semi pornographic descriptions of women getting dressed and how they're dressed and the parties that they go to and what color their gloves are and that kind of stuff.
And that actually gets me to one complaint that I have to make about Game of Thrones.
Huh.
The series is actually rather good for a fantasy series in that it's rather well-paced, it's exciting, it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
There are a lot of colorful characters on the screen, but I feel like the series, and I can't speak to the books because I haven't read them, although apparently the series is very loyal to the books, I feel like the series has been always sort of peddling to the lowest common denominator, using the easiest cheap shot possible to establish tension or engagement on part of the audience. And I can see Mike calling it.
I know what you're going for here.
It's like, okay, quick. You need to give me a scene where that will get the characters, that will get the play, that will make the audience really worried and then really sad. Well, what if an adorable animal was in danger?
Yes.
You know? And okay, well we need the audience to keep watching. Well, why don't we throw in a lesbian implied sex scene? or
spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers.
Kid being thrown off the
fucking or a child in danger.
Yes, that's exactly the one.
In danger, which is like the archetypal cheap shot.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I want to make sure people keep watching. Let's have a child get hurt.
Yeah, let's end on a child getting
hurt.
Let's end on a child getting
hurt
so we know they'll tune in.
Yeah.
Oh, also the spoiler again: Wolf getting killed, and then the boy waking up. End the scene with end this episode yeah. with
well,
that,
I,
right?
I don't want to mention that the wolf got yeah. killed, but yeah, having an yeah. an animal just die. That yeah. it's yeah. so it's easy. It's very easy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, oh, filler time. I don't know. Let's show some breasts.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, I think they've had enough time to watch it anyway, since these episodes have been apparently fairly hard to pirate. Because I know for a fact, at least in the channels that I go through, the first episode didn't go up until the Friday after it aired.
Really?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Boy, pirates getting sloppy on this shit.
No, they did it on purpose like that. They
oh.
wanted people to watch it.
Oh, okay.
But we are talking about episodes that have aired already.
Yes,
we're not
yeah.
talking about episode 3 or episode 4, which I haven't seen.
We have no privilege at HBO like that, nor
no.
will we ever.
No.
Essentially, this is just talk openly about how to pirate the show.
Yeah. yeah, I watched it legitimately on a cable television that subscribes to HBO.
Yes, sir.
However, if I wanted to rewatch it, I couldn't do that because my home... my home cable subscription does not include HBO.
Mm.
So, note on that, people. Do not pirate. Disclaimer, disclaimer.
Yeah, I guess. But I do feel like often they go the easiest possible route to create
yeah.
tension and to create titillation.
Titillation.
Yeah, well, the barbarian scenes, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of titillation, the barbarian scenes were awesome. I don't know what that barbarian's name is. What is it?
It's a stereotypical one
yeah.
syllable for
like
barbarian.
Or something. I don't fucking
yeah,
know.
Yeah, it's
but
really.
That guy is so borderline autistic and awesome that he just. I mean, the way he looks at people.
It's that blank stare.
That blank
yeah,
stare.
It's like,
what do they call it? Flat affect or something?
Yeah, flattened affect.
Flattened
affect.
Yeah, but he's got that and. Basically, the scene, the best...
My clothes itch.
The best scene I saw with him, though, was the scene where he was sitting outside the tent. He comes, he throws the beer down,
uh-huh.
and then he goes inside the tent and starts fucking.
Yes.
He's like, yeah. And he just like that, just like you were riding a horse. It's like, yeah.
And there is no change in his
no
expression
change in
this entire time.
That actor must be the most difficult type of demeanor to keep. You'd think it'd be easy, but especially when he's in a sex scene and he's got, you know, he's going there and he's...
Can I ask the author's credit, though, he already established that the barbarians were highly trained horsemen.
Oh, yes. That's true.
Can I ask one incredibly weird question, though? Which was harder for this actor, to keep the straight face the entire time or to not have a boner?
That's true. He probably had a boner. I mean, why not?
I have to imagine it's not having the boner.
I will opt not to comment on
yes.
that.
I just thought that was an interesting question. I'm sorry if that was awkward.
But,
yeah, I mean.
But, yeah, I don't... I will say I'm enjoying the characterization in the series. So.
Yeah.
The outstanding character for me right now is Peter Dinklage. His character.
Oh, the midget.
The imp.
Yeah, imp.
The dwarf.
The dwarf. Yeah.
Yes, the dwarf.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
I love him. That's a great character.
Yep.
I think he brings a certain amount of irreverence to the show that it desperately
yeah,
needs.
Yeah.
He's like the, oh shit, something's happened? Reality slap!
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, where he actually
yeah.
slapped the guy several times.
That was good.
That was good.
And necessary.
Yeah.
But I feel like anything in genre fiction that deals with fantastical worlds is always in terrible, terrible danger of taking itself too seriously.
Yeah.
And you need a character like that.
That's true.
Yeah. So,
yep.
So Game of Thrones, out of 10 stars, Rudy?
I'd say I'll give it two boners out.
Two boners out?
Yeah.
Out of 10 stars, I'm going to say 9. Mm. It's not perfect, but it's pretty dang, dang good. Huh. I mean, it's going to probably get me involved for the second season, which there seems to be, I guess.
Mm. Yes, it's been renewed already.
Yes, yeah. So.
Okay, let's clarify this. What's average, what's the minimum threshold for you to watch another episode?
I'd say about one half boner up.
You have your boner scale.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the star scale.
Seven is average and up from there.
Okay, so 7 is, I would watch another episode of this. I give it a 7.8.
Okay. So, it's got enough to watch.
So, yeah, it's definitely good enough for me to be willing to tune in again. Which is pretty rare, actually.
Right. Yeah.
But it's not Breaking Bad or Justified or the shows that I'm like, holy shit, if I miss another episode of this, I'll die.
Yeah, I put those as a 10 for me.
Yeah. Those shows would probably be like a 9.5. 10 is reserved for, like, the true classics. The Wire. The first 5, maybe 6 seasons of The X-Files.
No.
I don't know. I mentioned Wire, Arrested Development. That's about it, you know?
There's not many of those.
I don't know. I know this. It takes a lot to get me to watch anything on TV.
That's not a documentary.
So, I don't know. This gets pretty much the full boner from me. So, I don't know.
We still have some time. Any other topics?
Topics of play?
Not particularly.
No, I can think of the top of my head
that have come up during our exceedingly long hiatus.
Definitely none for me then, because I've been at home dealing with things not necessarily legal that I don't manage.
Don't say pirate.
No. And it isn't even anything bad. It's just, you know, typical computer crap. What's on the internet? Okay.
Yeah.
It's not like that.
I don't know where I've been. Where have I been? What day is this?
Oh, and I've watched a lot of sports. So, that's definitely not apropos for our audience.
Once, I watched a college basketball game in its entirety. Once.
That's a freaking miracle.
I think. I was over at someone else's house, and it was on the television, and they were sitting in front of it. So I sat down, and I was like, so the guys in black, they're throwing the ball.
Yeah, college basketball, not easy
real.
To stomach.
No, it's not.
40 minutes of what will probably be an 86 48 game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
hate it until you get to the tournament.
Yeah.
Huh. I stick to hockey.
Remember arena football?
What?
Arena football?
Okay.
That shit.
No, I don't.
Well, that's not even that old. That's like only 2 years ago.
Man.
Before that league folded.
Yeah, arena football was epic.
Was that like the XFL?
No.
No.
It was people playing football off of glass walls and nets.
Yeah, and crazy shit. It was a fun.
On what amounted to basically a 50-yard field, not 100 yards.
Yeah. More injuries and shit.
Still would rather watch European soccer.
Oh, yeah, just because of the ridiculous.
That's not even it for me. It's the kicks in the groins and the scullies that suck because there are a lot of those.
What's that dude's, that fucking player that's like a douchebag all the time? Is it Dane or something?
He's retired. Zinedine Zidane.
Oh, Zinedine Zidane. Yeah.
He sucks.
Yeah.
I once heard of him while I was watching the news.
You should have.
Put in some coke.
Yeah, that's what I heard. You should have. He's a French newscaster now, I think.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, no shit.
He sucks.
I have no sport. My sport is politics.
Yeah, it's also something I'm very much interested in, but it's hard to watch because there's no neutrality.
That's true. You really need someone to stand there and just read off the plays, you know, like they were, like a sportscaster.
Yeah.
Well, they used to have Obermann, but he's gone now.
Yeah, but he's partisan.
Very much
highly partisan.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
And most, I mean, you have the CNN anchors. I guess they serve that purpose.
Anderson Cooper is very clearly partisan, though.
You think Anderson Cooper is
he's been calling out a lot of Republicans on this birther crap lately.
That's true. Yeah. But to his credit, it is totally factually inaccurate.
It is. I'm not going to lie on that. I mean, it's
kind of funny, though, because you have this tension in journalism where you, on one hand, you have to maintain a facade of neutrality in any given argument. And on the other hand, you have a burden to communicate the facts in any given argument. So all of these articles about the birther movement, you can just see them walking that tightrope, you know, struggling. And they'll say, you know, this birther guy believes this. And they'll go in a paragraph and explain everything he believes. And then, oh, by the way, Obama has released his birth certificate. There's no factual basis to anything we just reported this guy saying. But we felt obligated to tell you that. Yeah. And this isn't an endorsement of his opponent.
It's harder than being a Syrian reporter right about now.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I'll put it like that.
Yeah.
Syria is really jumping.
Yeah, it is.
So there's that.
Right. But yeah, the birther thing is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Hard on, I imagine. I hope none of our fans are birthers.
And I hope some of them are. We want to hear from some birthers.
I do too, honestly. I'm just afraid that I'm going to get bombarded with comments. Like, no, you don't understand. Look at Obama's birth certificate. If you put it in Adobe Photoshop, you can see where it was Photoshopped.
You can see the little errors.
Obama's father's race is mentioned as African, but in 1961 it would have been Negro.
I've seen the proof that Obama's actually was born in Kenya. I've seen it. I swear.
I watched his mother give birth in Kenya, in 1961.
Yeah.
She showed me her ID, and I was the midwife.
Oh God.
I hold her uterus open.
Or on the opposite end, I've never seen that goddamn governor in Hawaii anywhere near Obama's mother. There's that.
There's that.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, actually, honestly, if people came on and made those kind of comments on our podcast, I would be honored.
that'd be pretty awesome.
I'd ignore him, but I would be honored too. Just that we even made it that high on the list of shit to be concerned about.
I know.
I know. What the fuck?
These three guys who live with their mothers believe Obama was born in the United States of America.
Damn progressives!
Well, to their credit, we are basically living in a socialist state of service.
That's true.
A mother state.
Mother state, yeah. Any state.
Yeah. Who's self-sufficient? Not us!
Not me. Who's dependent on the federal government? Well, actually, not so much, but...
Not us.
Still.
Speaking of politics, I wish there were a fascist party so that I could vote for them.
Really? Like, there is one, I thought.
No, there's not. They closed down.
Not with ballot access.
I must be thinking of the Canadian government.
Really?
I've been paying attention to that, too, because it's very funny.
Yeah, Canadian's awesome. I would vote for the Bloc if I lived over there, just for
the Bloc.
Yep. Probably NDP for me, probably.
Yeah, NDP for me also.
Man, I do the block, just because the block's so ridiculous. And
oh, it is. It's an entire movement about breaking up the government.
Yeah.
It's a government.
It's a separatist party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is one thing, and I'm going to give a problem to the birthers here. One thing that always bothered me was way back in 2008, when Sarah Palin was running for vice president, and there was this big, oh no, controversy about the fact that her husband was once a part of the Alaskan Separatist Party. Like that made him some sort of unfathomable, awful radical.
He's a demon.
Whereas, just to our north, we have a nation, a democracy, a... You know,
free nation.
Pretty open, as you said, parliamentary democracy that has a separatist party that is not only legitimate, but is one of the major parties that plays a significant role in their government, and that it, in the past has actually been a necessary part in creating certain coalition governments.
Yeah.
So to say that, oh no. Her husband was in a party that felt like this territory that is removed from the rest of the country by hundreds of miles maybe should be able to govern itself. Must be some kind of radical lunatic.
Yeah. No. I have to give him a bone on that one. That's just ludicrous. That's crazy as crap.
Right. But...
Yep.
Now that we've alienated both those on the right and those on the left from our listener base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've killed it all here.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And we still have a few minutes left.
Oh, wow.
A very few minutes left.
Least professional podcast on the internet.
So, I don't know.
I don't know either.
She's watching me pee.
Really?
What?
Yeah.
When that happened?
I don't know.
And who's she?
She, you know.
Her?
Her.
No, I don't
not
know.
Not he.
Yeah, I mean.
Not he.
Let's not bring up she, him, right?
Him, she?
Him, she. He, she.
So. Okay. So it sounds like you've been sexually abused.
Uh-oh, we're going into dangerous territory now, boys.
Yeah, weird.
I'm just saying it like it is. If someone is, if you've got a peeping Tom who's watching you urinate, I mean, you've kind of been the victim of some kind of sexual invasion of privacy.
Not really.
I mean, maybe it's not sexual, but...
Yeah, what if she just likes to watch somebody pee?
I mean, the whole thing came up because of Lady Godiva with the peeping Tom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where it started from.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry.
But
random thought.
Yeah. Maybe she just likes watching the stream because of the arc, the way it arcs is.
So she has an aesthetic appreciation for urine.
Just like some people like arches and buildings and that kind of stuff.
She likes the arch of descending piss.
Yep.
I can't argue with that.
No, you can't.
Whatever.
If it's an artistic appreciation, you really can't. Well, what can you say?
Yeah, I mean,
you can't argue with art.
Yeah, like Lewis Carroll, he couldn't argue with that, right? Oh, it's not child pornography, it's artwork.
So done.
I thought you were talking about Alice's Adventure in Wonderland for a second there, but no, you're talking about...
No, I'm just talking about how
his nude pornography. Yeah. His nude photography, rather. Right. Oops. Freudian slip, I said.
Nude pornography.
What else was that used for?
If he were alive today, he would probably be on 4chan going, CP, CP,
CP. Poor Lewis Carroll.
Yeah.
Well, he's dead now, so...
He is dead now.
Yeah. We aren't really bad-mouthing him.
Well, we're not saying he's a pedophile, we're just saying, guys.
Now, to his credit, apparently photographing children in the nude...
Other people's children.
Notes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What was in vogue at that point?
It was...
something of an artistic movement. So I don't know. So history, I don't know.
Oh.
So basically, history is full of perverts.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's clearly true. Are you kidding me? Oh.
Yep.
I wonder what they're going to look back on, you know, 80 years from now, and say, oh my god, those 21st century people were a bunch of perverts. Because we have this perception that we are becoming more sexually permissive as time passes.
That's true.
And while that may be, while it may be true that there's some ebb and flow, certainly we are more sexually permissive than we were in the 1950s or the 1850s.
Wait, are we about to do the thing?
I think that on the whole, we are getting more. We are becoming more prudish in general, in that there are things that were 100% commonly accepted.
Well, things like what?
In history. Well, for one thing, same-sex coupling didn't become a problem until, you know, the 19th century.
Yes,
probably.
Am I right?
Kind
of shunned.
But there are many historical cultures for whom same-sex coupling was commonplace. There were historical cultures for whom not pedophilia, but for whom marriage or sexual experiences at the age of, you know, early puberty plus was 100% accepted and encouraged.
So pederasty, basically.
Yeah, if you want to call it pederasty. And maybe even male-on-male pedophilia, if you look at the Greek cultures, and depending on when they took their words in. That was commonly accepted culture practice. Yes. Bestiality, even, arguably.
Oh, bestiality.
Something was going
back
on with the Greeks.
They made a documentary about it called Zoo, about those guys that go out to California to bang animals.
Oh my god!
I was not
aware
of the
movement.
But my general, the point I was trying to make was that we've actually, in general, history has a movement towards an increasingly constricted, repressive perspective on sexuality. The number of things that are socially acceptable are actually, over the overall course of history, becoming fewer and fewer. Even if conservatives now are saying, oh my god, they're letting gay people have sex.
That's true.
It's rather a new notion that gay sex would be anything but permissible.
Well, it's all an attempt to become more civilized. Because if you go back far enough, caveman and rape were like cake and my mouth.
Well, that's
cake in my mouth, that's a good one.
My question was, what sexual practices that are 100% acceptable today are going to be total faux pas in the future, or even perhaps to the point of how we consider pederasty today, where it's like, oh, they should all be, you know, hanged, or they should all die in prison. I wonder if there's any, if there's some behavior, like certain fetishes or something.
It depends on what you want to discriminate against, I guess. Because, I mean, it's like, those guys in the leather suits, we don't know who they are because they wear the mask, for example. If you know where I'm getting at.
I know where you are.
I could see BDSM becoming heavily frowned upon in the future.
Yeah, same here. That's what I was thinking. Prime target there, guys.
Because
that's pretty akin there to some torture beans.
Wow, we have really
strayed a ways away from deep
down the rabbit hole.
Well, here's your
deep down the rabbit hole.
I know, right? Yeah. Random bullshit for the win.
Yeah, but once again, we're not saying he was a pedophile. We're just saying he took pictures of other people's children in sexually explicit positions.
you might argue that they weren't sexually explicit.
That's true.
In a state of undress.
In a state of undress, yes.
In a, just about the
in
most
a state
extreme
of disrobiture or whatever.
Disrobiture.
which that's a phrase that I like, disrobe immediately.
Disrobe.
Why?
I don't know, it just sounds awesome. It's
you
like
will
command.
Probably hear that next time you take a flight.
Yeah, yeah, probably will. You got the beard and shit.
Disrobe immediately. It almost sounds like a spell.
Yeah, it does.
Like disrobus immediatus would be in Harry Potter.
Oh, God, that sounds like the spell they used when they made those Harry Potter wand toys in England.
Yeah.
And let's stop there,
oh,
though.
Yeah, the ones that
vibrated.
And became remarkably popular among adolescent
girls.
They actually had a vibrating Kadich broomstick.
Oh,
which also became remarkably popular.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Until it was discontinued.
Clearly.
My breeding boost. That's awesome.
Oh, next up for our popular culture, popular marriage at 29.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, sure, the age of marriage was going down recently, but there's nothing saying it would go up later.
Historically, it's been... on the rise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The historical age of marriage a few hundred years ago, 14.
15.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't even have to go that far back. 1700s or something like that?
Yeah, about 1800s, 14.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in some cultures, still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look at, what is it? A lot of those Arab nations still have that, yeah. Right?
I think so. There are several. Cultures with that presumed
Oman or Yemen or something.
Yeah. Poor Lewis Carroll.
Yeah, yes. Not a pedophile though.
So what? Why are you where did that even come from?
I don't know. Somebody brought up pedos and then.
No, I don't want to bring up pedos. You brought up Lewis Carroll.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it had to do with someone watching you urinate.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's watching the kids, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's it. Well, he only watched one kid to his credit.
Oh, okay.
Well, he photographed multiple different children.
That's true. But his heart was only
one. He had only one love.
Only one love, yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Writing a story for your 12-year-old girlfriend. Pretty cool.
And like most stories written for your girlfriend, it was actually written primarily in terms that only he could understand.
Yeah, boobble bobble.
But I mean, it's all based on these mathematic ideas about logic.
Yeah,
that,
yes.
Which
yeah.
were not going, you know, that's not what the 12-year-old was listening for.
No.
So like, all romantic gestures, ultimately selfish.
Yeah, very much so.
Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
I think that
that concludes this episode of three men living with their mothers to pedophilia.
Oh, God.
Tune in next time when we'll play Magic the Gathering for 6.5 hours and talk about dildos.
Dildos, dillies.
Oh. Fuck,
yeah.
Man.
Alright.
I
maybe we'll throw some StarCraft references in there for, you know, for long-term fans.
Yeah.
No, but honestly, next time, another discussion of Keystone.
Yep. And then something else that
some
we'll come
topic.
Up with.
Yeah.
Then sure, there's something going to be in the RSS news feeds about something.
Yeah, sure.
Freudian slip from Mr. Mike.
I know, right?
So, what sites are you primarily on those RSS feeds that you...
Actually, very legitimate ones. So,
porn is legitimate.
No porn. Nothing illegal at all.
Well, I didn't say illegal porn, but...
Oh, no. There's nothing illegal, no porn, nothing I would have to pay, no torrents, no nothing like that. Oh. It's actual legitimate stuff, like webcomics.
Oh.
I don't use RSS feeds, actually.
I just have, like, 65 different ones I want to follow, so I just put it all amalgamated on that thing.
I just spend the first hour after I get up going through the same 12 sites or whatever.
That's what I did for a while, and then I found that I wanted to follow about 30 sites, and then I was like, fuck, that's going to take forever.
Yeah.
So I just do this fucking RSS feed instead, which I know it sounds kind of antiquated, but whatever.
RSS feeds are pretty useful things.
They are.
A solemn reflection on RSS. I love how we talk about pedophilia, and it's like, and then we talk about RSS feeds. It's like, wow. That's a really important topic. Solemn topic, deserving of our concern.
Yeah.
Somebody out there is going to be like, why aren't you guys working in IT?
Moody? Well, I knew it was going to happen. Moody did a Google image search. Would you like to explain this search, Rudy?
Not really, it's for dildos.
Yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory. Ooh,
now we've got nothing to talk about next week.
Yeah, damn it. Yeah, we're going to talk about dildos, right?
No, we weren't.
Yeah,
we should talk about hobos.
Yeah, we should talk about hobos.
Hobos, yes. Hobos are a favorite topic of conversation.
Hobos are
pretty much poverty is... Man, I could talk forever about poverty.
Yeah.
The poverty cast.
Poverty cast.
Yeah, because we're already poor.
Yeah, exactly. Talk about something we know something about. As opposed to the previous topics we've been discussing today, which we know absolutely nothing about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Except for the fact that you knew that what is it, Carol there had nude kitty pictures, right?
I was an English major.
I know, I know.
I'm not nice showing to you.
I'll put it this way. The stuff you learn in anthropology class is worse.
That's true. That's true. It's
I hated that class so much because of that. So, there's your hint, kids. Don't take anthropology.
Anthropology.
Yes. Unless you've desensitized yourself with hours and hours of 4chan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Okay, so...
Anonymous has nothing on the last few thousand years of human history.
That's true.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, I think that was over an hour.
Yep.
Nicely done.
So, if we have any listeners left, and I imagine that whoever hasn't been offended by the things we've said before probably aren't offended yet... tune in next time for Mom's Basement Podcast Episode 30. Are we going to do anything special for that?
No,
fuck it,
meh.
Well, we will definitely discuss Part 2 of Keystone, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yep.
So that's Mom's Basement Podcast, signing off. Any final thoughts?
Callan, still want you to have my babies.
Poignant.